Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Walk the Talk with Kim show. I am Kim Ariano. And in the studio is Eric, our producer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. I'm inside, and it's outside is quite blustery and rainy, so you know I can't complain.
Oh my gosh, it just turned in the last 5 minutes. Holy moly! You know, I was driving up. I was downtown Seattle in a meeting today, and I was driving up Spring, you know, to get on the freeway. Plenty of time. I'm just going to jump on the bridge, get here, no problem. And I had forgotten that there's a lot of people that park where they're not supposed to be. And so I must have sat there for 15 minutes waiting for the tow trucks to navigate in to start pulling people off the street on Spring. And I'd never really experienced that before. And all I can think of was there's some people that are going to have a way worse day than I have.
True enough.
Have you ever had your car towed?
Well, only when it broke down, yeah.
Oh, yeah, me too. But you've never all of a sudden come out and all of a sudden your car is gone?
No, thankfully.
I've never had that happen either, but I can't imagine what that must be like. I've a couple of times have forgotten where I parked and freaked out and thought somebody stole my car. But have you ever had that happen?
No, thankfully
not. It's just me. It's just me. That only happens to me. Well, welcome to the Walk the Talk with Kim show. I'm really excited about today's show because we're going to talk about something that's a little bit of a love of mine, and that's animals. For those of you that remember, we've talked about this before. I got started in the nonprofit world, really working with Seattle Purebred Rescue, and that's a dog organization. And what I used to do when I first started with them in my early 20s is I used to go to the different animal shelters, and I used to look at the different breeds and figure out what's a purebred and what's not, and call the breed reps and pull out the purebreds and, you know, do all kinds of fun stuff. And then we're going to have Judy Kaler on with Seattle Beagle Rescue, but Judy and I started that, and she's still running the Seattle Beagle Rescue. But today we're going to be talking about cats, specifically the Feral Cat Spay and Neuter Project. And I'm really kind of excited. This is our first animal show. We've done all the people profiles, but now we're going to do an animal rescue organization I'm pretty excited about. And you're both of your cats, Eric, your cats are rescues, aren't they?
Yes, that's right. They were living on the mean streets of Tacoma before I adopted them. So yeah, they're former ferals.
Excellent. Former feral cats, but not so much anymore, huh?
Yeah, well, they've been reformed. It's only taken them about 6 years, but now they're starting to enjoy being domesticated, I think.
So. I wonder if you put them back on the streets, on the hard, cold streets, if they would.
They've got no street smarts anymore.
Forget it's all
about
gone?
It. No.
Yeah, or so you think.
Well,
they've got you wrapped around their little pinky paws, don't they?
One of them gets out about once a year for a couple days, and he just shivers in the yard and runs away when someone walks by, or, you know, a bag blows through, you know.
No.
So he's afraid of litter, so chances are pretty good he's not going to do too well out on the streets anymore.
But, you know, I had a cat when I was a young kid that, close your ears, Lauren, that we didn't spay. And this was back in the 70s when nobody really thought much about spaying or neutering cats. And he would run away for 2 or 3 days. And one time he came back and he was wearing a pink ribbon and he was clean, like he had had a bath, and he smelled really good. And he was this nasty black, you know, grumpy looking, like he'd rip your face off kind of cat. And when he came back, I've never laughed that hard in my life when I saw that cat coming up the side of our house, just all pinked out, and he got snagged by some old lady and got primped and prodded. I thought that was pretty
funny.
He got
a surprise makeover.
I guess. He probably came back
pretty
quick.
Was this pre-Oprah?
Yeah.
Oh.
What does Oprah have to do with it?
Well, she's always given makeovers to people, isn't she? So is there a cat version of Oprah that maybe
evidently the little old lady down the street.
Little Blackie and...
She must have been really sad when he took off and didn't want to come back. Oh, poor thing. Well, we're going to be talking with Lauren Glickman. Lauren is the executive director of the Feral Cat and Spay Neuter Project, and we're kind of regressing here. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, so how long have you been a part of this organization? Did you found it?
No, I didn't found it. I joined it in July. It'll be 2 years in July. The founder, there was a group of founders, about 4 or 5 people, and then Dr. Christine Wilford was the one who really stuck with it up until probably, she left just before I did to spend more time with her family, but she really gave about 14 years to it.
Wow. And so you've been with them for 2 years?
Almost 2 years, yeah.
And how did you get involved in this organization?
Well, I've been involved in animal welfare for quite a long time.
Oh, good.
About 12 years prior to joining Feral Cat Spay Neuter Project. And I was actually doing some consulting with groups that serve animals, doing strategic planning retreats, et cetera, et cetera. And three people sent me the job description for this particular job at the same time, and none of them knew each other. And I said, maybe I should think about this. And I
That's
did.
That's a sign from the great kitty above.
Yep.
So how many cats has your organization, do you think, been responsible for?
For altering. Over 65,000.
In 14 years?
Since 1997.
Wow, that's a lot. And think about what. So tell us a little bit about the reproductive cycle of a cat.
The numbers. Well, a female cat, it's possible for a female cat to have three litters a year. That's if everything is just, you know, chugging right along perfectly for that to happen.
Three litters a year?
It's possible.
Yeah. Wow.
And a female cat can start reproducing around 6 months. So it can happen early and it can happen often. She can have approximately four litters on average. She can have more, she'll have less, but an average of four kittens per litter. Mm-hmm. So if everything's, three litters a year, four kittens, that's 12 per year. Just to back up for one sec, if you look at this, we looked at the 65,000 cats that we had done, and about 52% of them were female. So we used that as a percentage. So if she's having 12 cats a year, and 52% of them are female, there's a certain percentage that will then reach reproductive age, et cetera, et cetera.
Within the year. It sounds like it's 6 months. So she has them at 6 months. Mm-hmm. By the time she turns a year, she could be a grandma.
Exactly.
Holy moly.
It's possible. And not all of them will reach reproductive age due to all kinds of things.
Right.
But that's a lot of cats
that's
that have been prevented.
That's a lot of cats.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And so we don't have a problem now because you're doing all of this, right?
I wish we could say that. No. Definitely, I think we're making a difference, and I don't think we can take all the credit. There are a few other high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter clinics in this area as well. Coalition Humane down in Tacoma, NOAA up in Stanwood, and there's, you know, Seattle Animal Shelter is doing some public spaying and neutering, and there are other places that are just starting on a small scale as well. So we've got a very
high... And the Humane
high,
Societies and all those organizations.
Yeah, some of them, they spay and neuter all the animals that they're going to adopt, but they don't necessarily do public animals.
Not all
of them. Whereas we will do feral cats for free. So if somebody has a mom and kittens that are hanging around their place, they want to fix them, they bring them in and it's free, and we give them a rabies vaccine. We ask for a donation for pet cats, but not everyone's able to do that. But they will adopt out cats that are only altered, which is great.
So give us some sense of the problem that we have with overpopulation of cats in general.
Well, there's a lot of people say different numbers, but if you think about how many cats are in homes, there's about 8 million cats in homes. There's at least that many out in the world that are homeless, that are not in homes.
8 million?
At least.
Okay.
Yeah. There are also thousands of cats that are being euthanized in shelters in our community. And the toll that takes on the people caring for them is something that I'm particularly interested in. It's one of the things that my consulting business addressed through compassion fatigue workshops, because it's not, of course we care about the kitties dying. That's absolutely huge. But the fatigue it causes the people that care about them is a huge cost to the community as well.
Right. And so how many cats do you think are living feral on the street in the Seattle area right now?
God, it's so hard to say. PetSmart Charities has a formula. You have to do all this, all these calculations to apply for grants. And one of the formula they give you is you take the population of the people and you multiply it times 0.6.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the number of cats in that area. So, you know, it's very difficult. I don't actually have that number in my head. How many people are in Seattle? I remember reading 750,000
right.
people in Seattle. So if you multiply that.
It's about 500,000 cats. And then you figure about half of those are actually living in homes.
That's the free roaming population, according to that
wow.
formula. Yeah.
And these are just cats that are just running around amazing.
Yeah, some of them are loosely owned, you know, meaning somebody either, quote unquote, set them free, abandoned them, or they slipped out. You know, there's lots of different reasons that cats are out there. And then people will put food on their porch, but they don't actually, quote unquote, call themselves the owner or the guardian. So they're loosely owned. They don't take them to the vet, but they'll feed them, you know, and keep their eye on them. And
cats are so much different than dogs in that way, because you can't have a neighborhood cat.
Right.
I'm sure there's a lot of neighborhood cats
there's
that they
lots.
Have no idea. They figure somebody owns them.
Yeah.
but that may or may not be true. Dogs, they kind of they belong somewhere. Mm-hmm. They don't normally run around.
Yeah.
You know, well, I guess they do, but I mean, cats are a little bit different. Probably would be very hard to determine ownership.
Absolutely.
So, how do you get a hold of them? People bring them in. Do you go out into the community and set traps? How does that work?
We don't actually trap the cats. We work with a lot of practitioners of TNR. Those are people that trap, neuter, and return them back out. We also work with rescue groups like Meow and Kirkland. They come in once a month with 50 cats. We alter all 50 of them that day, and then they take them back, and they're going to be out. They're going to adopt them out. Mm-hmm. We also, individuals who have 1, 2, 3, 5 cats that they want to get altered, we will do those as well. There are some people that are out there constantly trapping and bringing them in. We have one woman, she will, well, we have several, a couple. They will bring in 50 cats in one particular day. This one woman is working in the Aberdeen area in the Grays Harbor. And she will go down for a weekend. Everybody knows she's coming on that weekend. So she'll have appointments with a variety of people all over the area and will gather up all these cats, and then at the end of the weekend, if she has 36, she meets all these people who own kitties in the parking lot to get the rest of them to make up 50, and then she comes in that next day. I went and spent a weekend with her doing it. It was amazing to see how she coordinated everything. It was amazing.
Well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we definitely want to talk about compassion fatigue and what you're working with that, and also about the unique makeup of a person who does rescue. I think we both probably have something to share there. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on KKNW AM 1150. We are talking with Lauren Glickman of the Feral Cat Spay and Neuter Project.
Since 1977, Pearson Law Professionals have compassionately guided individuals and their families through the legal process to seek justice for insurance disputes and personal injury claims. Pearson Law has secured justice in civil matters with a network of resources, wealth of experience, and a compassionate attitude. That's the Pearson Promise. Call 800-423-8473. That's 800-423-8473 for a free case evaluation. Or check them out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Hey, my name is Craig Goble.
And I'm Dory Z.
And I'm Rob Gray.
And together, we're the best thing you can do on a Thursday afternoon from 4 to 6. We're talking about leading-edge real estate topics.
Learn the ins, outs, and secrets of the real estate industry.
And why things work and why things don't every week on Real Estate Radio.
We'll tell it to you as it is, straight, honest, and from the cuff.
And where else can you listen to three real estate professionals who are doing this every day? We're in the trenches, putting transactions together and solving problems.
Real Estate Radio.
Tune in every Thursday afternoon, 4 to 6.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
As carefree and wild, but I got cat class and I got cat style.
Welcome back to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm Kim Ariano. The show is sponsored by Pearson Law Firm. Expect expert representation, a wealth of experience, and a kind, compassionate attitude from Pearson Law Firm. That is the Pearson Promise. Also wanted to remind our listeners that the inaugural Brain Matters Awareness Auction and Celebration Luncheon is happening at the Bellevue Hyatt on May 26th at 11:30 a.m. This is in support of the Chris Elliott Fund for glioblastoma brain cancer research. Some of you may remember Dylan Elliott, the wife of Chris Elliott, joined us about 2 or 3 shows ago to talk about the exciting new advancements in brain cancer research. And she also wanted to remind me to let you all know that the Novo TTF product actually passed the FDA, and they are right now doing brain cancer research on live folks. And again, this is a little device that just sits on the top of the head. No chemotherapy, no other things necessary, and it's showing that it's shrinking brain cancers. And some of you may be remembering that glioblastoma is what killed Senator Ted Kennedy, among others. So it's definitely a huge breakthrough in cancer research and awareness. So please do think of supporting the Chris Elliott Fund for Glioblastoma Brain Cancer Research. And you can get in touch with them at go to www.walkthetalkwithkim.com, and we'll have that information there. Or you can go straight to www.chriselliottfund.org. That's C-H-R-I-S-E-L-L-I-O-T-T fund.org, and you can request tickets and come join us at the inaugural Brain Matters Awareness Auction and Celebration Luncheon. And John Curley is going to be the sponsor and the MC for that event. So we're very excited about that. Welcome back. And we were talking with Lauren Glickman of the Feral Cat Spay Neuter Project. And one of the questions that I had for you, Lauren, is if we were to remove all of the feral cats that are running around, wouldn't we have a rodent problem? I know that seems to be a silly question, but, you know, I'm just thinking about ecosystem. Have we built an ecosystem that is supporting these cats, or at least some of these cats?
You know, I can't. I haven't studied that, so I really don't know the answer. But I know that a lot of coyotes are eating the rodents as well.
Oh, so it's just going right up the food chain. Yeah.
I personally don't think that's a reason not to reduce the number of fertile free-roaming kitties.
Mm-hmm. Seems like there'll always be plenty, regardless of how much people do.
Yeah, it's a sad state. But yeah, no, I agree with you. You're talking in these numbers, 65,000 cats probably is in the millions that actually were not born.
Yes,
you know, that kind of decreased the population. So that's great. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the woman in Grace Harbor and about, tell us what you were telling me on the break about the statistics out of Grace Harbor.
Well, there's one woman, she has pulled out 509 ear tips. And when I say ear tips, I mean free roaming cats. We tip the ears so that when someone sees them, they can visually tell that they've been altered. So if they're trapped again, they don't get brought back in, sedated, anesthetized, and then, opened up again. We can tell visually that they've been altered. For just as a digression, the cats that are pets that are not ear tipped, we put a tattoo on their belly. So if they are also caught, once they get their belly shaved, it's known that they are altered, so they don't get opened up again.
Oh, gotcha.
So when I say ear tip, that's what I mean. Cats that are free roaming that have been altered. She pulled 509 cats out that were ear tipped and 116 cats that did not get ear tipped. So those were pets of somebody's that were going to be inside. So 625 cats total.
And that's in what time period?
That's in 2010.
Wow. Okay, 1 year. One woman in one year.
One woman in 1 year.
Do the cats get to pick the tattoo, by the way?
It's an S or an N.
Oh, okay.
What do you think? They get a little Popeye on there?
Maybe a little mom.
A little shamrock.
What do they call that one? Oh, wait, we probably shouldn't say that on
there. A picture of a bird or something.
Little X over the top of
cute,
it for every kill.
There you go.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. What we were talking about before, if people are feeding the neighborhood cat and they notice that the neighborhood cat has an ear tip, hey.
Yeah, they know it's been altered. They don't need to trap it to bring it in to get fixed.
They can just keep feeding it and keeping their fingers crossed the coyotes don't
get it. Try and tame it and bring it on in if they can.
Is that the preference?
Ideally, yeah. Okay. Ideally, it would be. I mean, we want to reduce the population of free roaming cats because they have a harder time outdoors and they do impact the environment. You know, there's a lot of reasons why the environment gets impacted: human development, habitat destruction, and non-native species. So cats are one of them. And we don't want to scapegoat them, but we do want to acknowledge, we don't deny that they have an impact, but we don't want to, villainize them entirely.
Villainize the poor little kitties.
Exactly. There's a lot of reasons. But ultimately, if all the cats could live inside in a cushy, yummy world, that would be the most ideal thing ever.
Because you can't do that with rats, raccoons, or coyotes. So
definitely
cats
don't want to do
the
that
most
with them.
Sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I live up in the woods, and so we have issues with owls and cats mm-hmm. and yeah. raccoons and cats and things. So,
yep.
Well, don't indoor cats actually live longer?
Absolutely.
As well,
so. Yeah, they have a higher quality of life. I think even the most adamant defender of a cat's right to live out in the wild would say cats living indoors have a higher quality of life. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, easy. And they didn't evolve here with all the species here. So, and the birds didn't evolve with them either. So
right.
It's hard. It's a big human wildlife conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, my dad would get the feral cats, and he's got a barn over next door. Mm-hmm. And so we'd get the feral cats and he'd stick them out in the barn. The yep. one thing that we were finding is that any cat that was not gray or black, if it had any white on it whatsoever, orange on it whatsoever, it didn't do well in the
yeah.
woods.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. They're very visible.
Yeah.
They don't have any camouflage.
No. So those need to be city cats mm-hmm. or at least inside cats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at mm-hmm. it. So, well, wonderful. So how are you funded? I mean, what are the different ways that you can do? I mean, that's got to be expensive to neuter and spay all of those mm-hmm. cats.
It is. We're a nonprofit, so all of our funds come from donations or events or grants. We have a big event every year called our Sexless Soiree.
Mm.
And this year it's September 17th, so everybody should save that date and come. And it's a really fun silent and live auction with a wine toss and a game wheel, and it's a really playful event. And that's a big part of our fundraising. I also write a bunch of grants, and we ask for donations from people who bring pet cats in. We ask for $25 for females, $15 for males, which doesn't cover the cost. Our cost per surgery is about $40. It depends how many cats we do each year, because mm-hmm. we just divide by our operating cost. And people make donations above and beyond that. We also do outreach events where we go to the Northwest Women's Show, or Average Joe Pet Show is coming up, or Average Joe Cat Show is coming up May 14th, the weekend of May 14th. So we'll be there with a table, and a lot of people love knowing about us. They'll buy t-shirts and tote bags, etc.
Okay, so what's the Average Joe Cat Show?
It's, I think...
Listen up, Eric. You might have to take Snowball down there.
Marshmallow. Yes.
I knew it was white. I knew it was one of the... Yes. Yeah. Is it a big white fluffy cat?
Well, she's not that big, but she is quite fluffy.
Okay.
Yes.
I had this image of you and this white fluffy cat, so that's... I'm glad I got that right.
Mm-hmm. I believe
it makes me sound like a supervillain, but...
That's awesome.
I think that Average Joe Cat Show is Perfect Pals fundraiser. And what it is people who have remarkable kitties can bring them in and they have a cat show. So it's the Average Joe's Cat Show rather than, you know, the fancy breeder cat show. This is just the fluffiest or the fattest or the longest whiskers or, you know, whatever's superlative about that cat.
Like the most tolerant? Because I think I have
the
most tolerant.
You have the most tolerant? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can bring your cat and enter it into the most tolerant contest, I think.
Really? Oh, my gosh.
I've got the most vocal cat, so I don't know if that's a category, but...
I'm sure it probably is.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Does she yodel?
No, Fergal, he is a quite a loud cat. Yeah, he doesn't know the difference between indoor voice and outdoor voice, because now he's an indoor cat, so he never...
Right.
Sees the two. So, yeah, he's very vocal.
Your cats would be like upside down at the end of their little cage if they went to an event like this, wouldn't they?
You know, I'm not sure. They might be.
Oh.
Yeah. They haven't been around a lot of other cats for a while, so we'll see.
Huh.
It's definitely not for everybody.
No.
Not for every kitty.
I think my cat would actually do great. She's this big gray fluff ball, and I think she's got whatever that breed is, that ragdoll that just kind of mm-hmm. flops around. Because you pick her up, she just flops. Throw over your shoulder, she flops.
It's her defense mechanism.
She's cute. That's it. That's her only defense mechanism. And she hates the dog, but that's mm-hmm. about it. She even stands up to the dog. But yeah, you pick her up, she just goes limp on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so she might do good at that. That would be a lot of fun. That's May 14th. But your event is on September 17th is your big auction. And mm-hmm. where is that?
That's going to be at Within Soto in South Seattle.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
And tickets are going to be on sale in the summertime, so we'll make sure that we put that on the Walk the Talk with Kim website, and then we can do fun stuff. That would be great. And then if people want to just donate, or if they want to sponsor a cat, how would they do that?
They can write to us or call me, either way. My email's on the website, and you can also write to questions@feralcatproject.org.
So somebody wants the website, that's... what's the website?
Feralcatproject.org, www.feralcatproject.org.
F-E-R-A-L-C-A-T project.org. Yep. Okay, good, because I'd spell feral wrong.
Yeah, yeah, it's one of the very, very commonly misspelled words for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure probably. I think of ferals like in the ice cream place, but it's not that feral.
No.
It's the other kind of feral. Well, excellent. So we are going to head into a break here, because when we come back, I want to talk more about compassion fatigue. And this, we're going to switch a little bit topics from cats to compassion fatigue. See, I'm already starting to get fatigued. And so thank you for listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. We're talking with Lauren Glickman. If you want more information, you can go to www.walkthetalkwithkim.com. And don't forget, you can listen to the podcast on our Facebook page at Walk the Talk with Kim on Facebook, as well as if you have an iPhone, iTunes, you can have the Walk the Talk with show automatically downloaded to your iPhone so you can walk and listen to us talk. And so thank you for listening. And this is Kim Ariano with Walk the Talk with Kim. It's funny how the missus always looks a bleeding sane. And meanwhile at the station there's a couple of likely lads who swear like as your father, and they're very cool for cats, they're cool for cats.
Whether they're working on an automotive accident case or helping a client injured by a defective product, the Pearsons are passionate about serving their clients. Their successful approach tackles the right issue at the right time with the best tools and expertise available. Clients rave about the Pearson Law Team's savvy abilities to ensure clients' voices are heard and to demystify the legal process and explaining choices and opportunities. Contact them at 800-423-8473 or PearsonLawFirm.com. That's P-E-A-R-S-O-N LawFirm.com. Or check out WalkTheTalkWithKim.com for more.
Have you heard the phrase, "The beatings will continue until morale improves"? To organizations, employees are the biggest assets and biggest fans. If they're not feeling heard or appreciated, the bottom line will suffer. For mission-driven organizations, the reliance on employees and managers to rally around the core messaging is critical for success. At Ariano Consulting, we provide leadership best practices, education, and communication strategies for mission-driven organizations. Whether you're a business of one, middle manager, or leader in a large company or nonprofit, our experiential workshops and focused on organizational psychology will assist you in achieving success with your messaging and vision. Call for a free consultation today, 425-888-9790, or check us out at www.walkthetalkwithkim.com. Ariano Consulting, achieving your message through understanding human behavior.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM. By the time I'm sober, I've forgotten what I've had. And everybody tells me that it's cool to be a cat, cool for cats.
Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm Kim Ariano. I'm here with Lauren Glickman from the Feral Cat Spay Neuter Project. I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about this phenomenon or concept called compassion fatigue. And I'm going to have you explain it a little bit more, but I wanted to share a little bit of my experience in that I worked with the rescue organization. And my favorite part was working with the success stories, was working with the dogs that came in and working with behavior evaluations and a little bit of training and all that. The most difficult part of the job, there were two. The first one was dealing with the people. That was very, very hard for me.
Yeah.
And I love people. I love working with people. But I was convinced at a certain point, I got so jaded. I said, you know what? 70% of the population shouldn't have a dog. You know, I just got really jaded. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily believe that now, but I think at the time, just seeing the aftermath and being there when dogs were put to sleep because they were biters, or being there because, you know, a dog got run over by a car because it wasn't restrained, you know, just all of the things that you get really compassionate about. I did have to finally just walk away and just say, okay, I need to just let this part of my chapter close a little bit, because it was very, very difficult for me to put a smile and take any enjoyment in what I was doing, because it was just so dang sad. So sad. And that was just beagles. I mean, how could you get that? I mean, come on, it's beagles. Yeah. But, you know, you see this happen with a lot of organizations, and these people with this almost crazed look in their eyes and the hair all over the place, and you can tell that they don't necessarily take as good care of themselves as their animals sometimes. And I get that. I completely understand. You recognize this as well, and you've kind of put together a program and some ideas to deal with compassion fatigue. And this isn't necessarily just for animal rescue. It can be for anybody that is in where their cause is so great and they're so passionate about what they're doing. But there's a real phenomenon that comes with that. Can you talk a little bit about how you recognized that this was a problem, and maybe some stories for us, and then tell us a little bit about your program?
Well, compassion fatigue really is it's a result of constant exposure to secondary or vicarious trauma. And so it is, it's not just in the field of animal welfare, it's in any caretaking field. Therapists can suffer from it, people who work rescuing in disasters, firefighters, et cetera. And I got involved because when I was a volunteer manager at the PAWS Wildlife Center for 5 years, and four of us from PAWS, two from the Wildlife Center and two from the Companion Animal Shelter, went down to Oregon to a training. It was a 2.5-day training on compassion fatigue, and it was a certification process. And we were sent down so we could bring back a lot of the information and share it with the other staff. So we went down there, and I had all these aha moments about what was going on in the field, and I could see it in my coworkers. I could just see that this was something we really needed to embrace, take seriously, and I started studying it more and did my own work. I also ended up going to graduate school for applied behavioral science, organizational design, and coaching and consulting in organizations, and really wanted to help build healthy organizations. That's what I really was starting to focus on. And I wanted to do it in the field of animal welfare. So I, along with a friend of mine, Hillary Ann Hager, who also worked at PAWS at the time, we really developed a one-day workshop, because not everybody can spend 2.5 days. And we wanted to create a one-day workshop that people could go to and have some aha moments, like really get something from it and begin the journey. Because even our 2.5-day workshop wasn't like, oh, I'm cured, everything's fine. Yeah. It was more like, okay, I see that this is a process. It's a process of building resiliency is really what taking care of yourself means in the face of compassion fatigue, because the field is full of difficulties. You know, you were talking about the people. I do surveys and before every single compassion fatigue workshop, and every single time, with no exception, the thing that people reported as the most difficult thing in their work world was interpersonal relationships, dealing with members of the public, interoffice politics.
Yes,
that is it. Euthanasia was up there.
Yeah,
but it was never first, ever, not once.
Euthanasia for me, while traumatic, there was closure in a much different way. If I had one more person call me up and say they were going on vacation on Saturday and they had this 16-year-old dog and they didn't want to put it in a kennel, will you take it? I was ready to kill somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is amazing to me how cruel our neighbors are. Mm-hmm. And that to me was just...
It's a very difficult thing to metabolize, whereas we can go through cycles of grief and process euthanasia, process sadness and grief, but it's very hard to process fury and rage and
you can't
anger.
Do anything but smile, because you want the animal. Who knows what's going to happen to it if they don't leave the animal with you. And I remember a situation in particular where we had a family and the dog was just not getting the care that it needed. And I went to go pick up the dog and the dad just got in my face and started screaming at me and screaming at the kids, how dare you? I mean, you can tell that the family situation was violent and volatile. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, part of me was just wrenched with, how do I get out of here with the dog? Mm-hmm. And it wound up not happening. They wound up keeping the dog. But I'm getting in my car driving away going, I was just right in the middle of a domestic dispute mm-hmm. over a dog.
Yep.
And stuff like that happens all the time. So how do you recognize that someone in rescue that you need help or that, you know, might be a good idea? What are some of the signs that you learned in this class that you can share with us?
Yeah, there are a lot of symptoms. Some of them are, you know, someone's having bad dreams. Some of the things people identify in themselves, you know, invasive thoughts, bad dreams, self-medicating, you know, with alcohol, drugs, cigarettes, wanting to avoid contact with others, lack of intimacy, really being unfair to people who don't deserve it, or just withdrawing entirely, dismissing people before you even know what they are, knowing exactly how someone's going to be before they even show up. You know, there, and it shows up differently in people, in each person based right. on whether you tend to be introverted or extroverted, or you tend to want to be in groups in general, or you don't. So it's different for everybody, but it's a real, there's a trajectory, you know, there, people often start with the zealot phase or no boundaries. I'll do anything. I'll stay late. I can right. help everyone. And then they go from the zealot to being irritable to withdrawing to becoming a zombie, and there's a lot more details in there, but it's basically the hero to zero thing where mm-hmm. you start off, you know, just completely gung-ho. It's not like that's the good phase either, because there are no boundaries in that phase, you know, and that it's really making sure to stay healthy. You have to have your boundaries, take care of yourself. And like you were talking about, people in the caretaking fields are notoriously bad at caring for themselves. So yes. this workshop is all about caring for the caretaker. How do you build resiliency into your own life so that you can stay yeah. and do this work that we're committed to doing?
And pace yourself. Exactly. You're almost describing a manic depressive mm-hmm. episode, aren't you? Kind of in a long, drawn out process.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. So people that it's hard for those of us that are in the nonprofit world, because we see somebody that has excitement and is bringing, like, oh, good. You know, come on, mm-hmm. we encourage that because you want them to get involved. You want them to get right. excited so that, you know, your person that's been around for 5 years can go take uh-huh. a break. If we look at the cycle, so if you and I take a step back as people that are both interested in organizational psychology and social psychology and how this all fits together, mm-hmm. how should we change, do you think, our approach to, it's a big question, mm-hmm. I apologize up front. Mm-hmm. How do we take a look at our approach to this? It almost looks like a mill. I mean, you bring somebody in, you get them really excited, or they get really excited. They start, they run, and then they end up at the back end burned mm-hmm. out. But the whole way to keep the thing going is to keep bringing in fresh excitement. How do you think, if you were to structure an organization, or if you were to look at a healthy way of creating a nonprofit organization, what's one way of looking at that?
Well, I have two different answers for that. One is, I really think you need to make sure you have a good fit. You want to make sure you got the right people in the right spots. Mm-hmm. You know, some jobs have multiple skill sets, and you get people who are really great at one set of skills, and then the other set is a not as used muscle, for example. So you want to make sure you've got the right people in the right places. I also am thinking back on the time when I was a volunteer manager at the Wildlife Center. I interviewed every single person who came in. We did not have the warm body mentality where, you know, you want to volunteer, come on in. We need every hand on deck. Instead of that approach, we took the approach, I'm going to talk to you for about an hour, and I'm going to really talk to you about what you can expect. Because the more realistic your expectations are, the more satisfied you're going to be. Nothing is worse than unfulfilled expectations right. or unrealistic. You get frustrated or angry or whatever. So really making sure people understand what they're getting into, understanding the emotional aspects of it, euthanasia, right. all that kind of stuff. I also, every volunteer had to go through an ethics workshop where we talked about the 11 of the most contentious issues in the field. So we talked about native, non-native. We talked about keeping animals for live education or not keeping them, so that it wasn't about convincing everybody that they should believe, but we wanted everyone to understand, so there wasn't a lot of confusion, there was no mystery. It was just, this is what we do at the Wildlife Center, this is what we don't do. I think you can apply that to the broader scope, where you want people to come in with realistic expectations, really understanding the philosophy of the organization, the culture, as much as you can upon coming in. You know, I'm sure you have studied group development and the joining phase, when you really, you want to make sure people have a good understanding of a very full, robust orientation, rather than just come on in, stick them in there, and like, good to go.
Yeah.
You got the job description, you got the job title, you're good. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. Right. It's a much more integrated approach, I think, where you take the whole person into account versus you have hands, you can clean things. Yay, go.
Right. You have a car, you can go pick up some animals
exactly.
and drop them off.
Yeah. It's really making sure that the person is well suited for it. You know, there were times when I would turn a volunteer away and say, why don't you go home and think about it? You know, yeah. and they wouldn't call because they'd know, mm-hmm. you know, and I want them to feel pressure by saying, okay, let's sign up now, you know, right. and some people would, they're like, yep, I understand everything you said and I'm going in this, I want to do it. And, you know.
Yeah. I with board development as well as with mm-hmm. volunteer development,
exactly.
it's really important for organizations to really define the roles and responsibilities mm-hmm. and make sure that you're putting people in those positions that it's intrinsic, because yep. you're right. And that's really hard to do, especially when you found an organization. The skill set that got the organization up and at them isn't the same skill set that keeps it mm-hmm. running on a functional basis.
Yeah.
So recognizing weakness, you know, I was the treasurer, but I don't really like to do that.
Yeah.
So making sure that we hire somebody who specifically can do the treasurer mm-hmm. work. Because you're right, if you just leave it as an open casting call, it brings in an element of ambiguity that is not mm-hmm. healthy for the organization. Mm-hmm. And then the interpersonal arguments start because there's different philosophies and perspectives about what is right and what is wrong.
Yep.
And when you're talking about things like animal welfare, or you're talking about children, or you're talking about life or death issues, it is extremely passionate on a level you just don't find in the corporate
right.
boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're right, it's really important. And as a volunteer, I mean, certainly what we don't want to do is tell volunteers, oh my gosh, you don't want to volunteer because it's so hard.
Right.
There's an incredible reward mm-hmm. that comes with volunteering, but it's even on a more incredible scale when you're doing something that you're passionate about, that you're intrinsically motivated to do, that is utilizing your techniques and mm-hmm. your skills and your genius to the fullest. And
absolutely.
When you find that place in an organization and can pace yourself mm-hmm. within an organization, you get a lot more benefit out of it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. And so how often do you run these workshops?
I don't run them regularly by myself. I'm hired by groups. The Washington State Federation of Animal Care and Control Agencies offers a compassion fatigue workshop to their members, and I do the training for them at least once a year. And so it might be in Spokane this year, but I'm not positive. So none of your listeners should say, I'm going to Spokane. You got to look okay. on their website and see when it is. And there's a member fee and a non-member fee, et cetera.
Gotcha.
But I've been hired by Humane Society University and various organizations. I went out to Kitsap Humane Society as well and did it for their whole staff, Everett Animal Services as well. And I've gone to Pennsylvania and Florida and California.
Excellent.
So it's not just I'm holding one, everyone come. It's an organization wants to do that, I'm a trainer that will.
Excellent. Well, we're going to get your information out there and talk more when we come back. We went over. I love this topic. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on KKNW AM 1150.
Jerry and Michelle Pearson of the Pearson Law Firm are local residents just like you who have a passion to help those who have been wronged in our community. If you have a personal injury, automobile accident, property hazard, industrial injury, defective product, or nursing home neglect issue, award-winning Pearson Law Firm can help anywhere in Washington. Contact them today for a free case evaluation at 800-423-8473. That's 800-423-8473, or check them out at walkthetalkwithkim.com. Ever feel like strangling your boss?
You little...
Or maybe you're the boss and your employees make you want to strangle yourself. Drop that noose and tune in or call in to The Boss Show, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150. Hosts Jim Hessler and Steve Motenko, co-owners of Path Forward Leadership Development, will take your calls on everything boss-related, offering deep insights with a dollop of outrageousness. The Boss Show, workplace wisdom with heart and humor, Wednesday afternoons at 5.
Come join the original Adventure Boot Camp for Women in the Pacific Northwest. 7 years and running. See for yourself what it's all about, an experience you don't want to miss. Adventure Boot Camp is a four-week outdoor fitness program that offers fitness instruction, nutritional counseling, and motivational training, packed with fun and energizing activities designed to help you build a strong, fit body and mind. Whether you want to lose unwanted fat to feel fabulous in your clothes, or if you want to boost your metabolism and renew your energy, this program is for you. Now is the time to get started. Class size is limited and fills quickly, so go to eastsidebootcamp.com or call Kimbro at 425-890-5037.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I am Kim Arellano, and it is the Year of the Cat, in the Vietnamese New Year. It is officially the Year of the Cat.
Fantastic.
So there you go. So this is perfect that you're here.
And we've been talking about feral cat rescue, of course, on the show today, too.
We have been talking about feral cat rescue.
Al Stewart's coming to the Triple Door, so it all ties together.
Is he still alive? No.
He's still alive, apparently. Wow. He's playing in May. So.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did he have any other songs besides that one? He wrote for a lot
of
people.
That was his big hit.
Yeah. I don't think he recorded too much, but I think he wrote a lot of songs for people.
I'm sure he recorded a lot, but that was his big hit.
That was his big hit. So, well, good. Well, he's coming in May, so you get to hear even more of his music coming up. So, excellent. Well, we've been talking, excellent conversation with Laura Glickman. Before we go, I did want to talk a little bit more about the feral cat spay neuter and how do people get involved. So now that we spent the last talking about, you know, compassion fatigue, let's talk about how can you volunteer for the organization, or what is it that the organization needs besides funding? Mm-hmm. Do you need people to take an interest in their local cat population?
Absolutely. It would be great if people know of a colony of cats that's reproducing and they want to get involved and trap them so that we can fix them. That is a wonderful way to get involved. And we can also put people in touch with experienced trappers if they're like, I don't know how to trap. I don't even know where to begin. I don't have a trap. We can definitely put them in touch with people who will be able to mentor them, give them tips, and train them so that they feel more confident going out and doing it. We work with quite a few people who trap. And even if they just want to trap the cat that their neighbor left when they moved out of the apartment complex that's been there, that they know, you know, is still intact, we can lend you a trap for that. We ask for a deposit so that we can hopefully get the trap back. And then they bring the cat in, and we will alter it. So that's a great way to get in touch, and in fact, probably the best way is to go out and bring the cats in. We also have clinic volunteers. If people want to come in, clean carriers, watch the cats while they wake up from anesthesia, those two tasks go hand in hand. So while cleaning cats isn't the most glamorous activity, it's super important because you're right up close with the cats that are recovering in the next carrier, and we need to make sure that they wake up and in a good way. And if there's any problem, that we're alerted early so that we can get the vet out there to check him out. We so rarely lose a cat, but a lot of times we don't lose the cat because somebody saw it, which is great.
So these are cats that just have a reaction to the anesthesia.
It happens very, very infrequently.
But you still need somebody there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We just want to make sure that they're waking up at the right pace. And so you clean carriers and monitor the cats. You can also end up shaving kitty bellies and prepping the surgical field. That's a really fun thing. And we have outreach volunteers who go to things like the Average Joe Cat Show or Paws Walk or Northwest Women's Show and sit at the table and talk to people and tell them about what we do and tell them how to get involved. We also have a fundraising events. So we need people to come work the fundraising events or help us procure items. Go ask their local restaurants or anyone they have a connection with to donate to the auction and be on the procurement team. Lots of different ways. Graphic design. There's lots of different ways to get involved.
Excellent. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm going to solicit grant writing because I really want to make a plea because you just brought this up. Mm-hmm. In my nonprofit organizations, in general, desperately need grant writers. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, I'm not a grant writer. I haven't taken it. Well, you know, it's not that hard. It's just time consuming. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are tons of organizations right in your local community. And it's not something that you have to really be tied down to. But if you can't, you know, foster an animal, or you can't, you know, be on the hook for a specific time to go to, you just want to be able to do some volunteer work when you have time, grant writing is a perfect opportunity. And it's a hugely needed skill. Mm-hmm. And I would highly encourage folks, if you're interested in offering some sort of volunteer support that you can just do from the comfort of your own home, why don't you reach out to me directly at kim@arellano.com. That's A-R-E-L-L-A-N-O consulting, C-O-N-S-U-L-T-I-N-G.com. And yes, there's classes you can take, and yes, there's things you need to know about grant writing, but I think the best way to learn how to write a grant is just to write a grant. If it's something that you enjoy doing, it's a highly prized skill and a highly prized thing. I think a lot of organizations really, really need good grant writers. Because unfortunately, I think what we're seeing is, again, a lot of people that start the organizations that have a lot of passion for it, they're doing all of these different things. Mm-hmm. And those are some of the things that we really need help with. So how about trappers? If there's anybody out there that feels like trapping a kitty.
Absolutely.
You can show them how to do that.
We can
do it for you. You can call them and say, hey, go. My dad's really good at trapping raccoons.
Oh, yeah.
Really good at trapping raccoons.
That's pretty similar. Yeah, we have people who will teach people how to trap. We don't trap. I'm very clear with people that we advocate for spay and neuter. We are a spay-neuter organization, and a lot of people who do trap, neuter, and return work with us, but we don't trap, neuter, and return. I think it's an important distinction to make. Our mission is to spay and neuter as many cats as possible and mentor others who want to do the same. So we have a mentoring website, and we have people come to our clinic regularly. We've had people from Egypt and Amsterdam, California, New Mexico, all over the state come see our process because we are so efficient, so that they can go back and either start or improve a clinic. So we are all about spay and neuter. I just wanted to clarify that.
And where is your clinic?
It's in Linwood, right off the highway. Once you're off the highway, it's maybe 2 minutes away.
What's the address of it?
4001 198th Street Southwest in Linwood.
And if somebody just wanted to pop in and see, are there people there that can give them a little bit of a tour or at least explain what they're doing there?
Absolutely. But you should make an appointment with me to make sure I'm there, because the clinic staff's going to be performing the surgeries and they're not going to be able to walk you around. On top of that, we're open Sunday through Wednesday and Monday through Thursday, alternating weeks in the winter. And we'll be open Sunday through Thursday every week in the summer. So it depends, you know, which week it is and whether, you know, if we have 50 cats, we're there a longer day. Occasionally when it's rainy like this, it's harder to trap. And so we might only have 25 cats on a random day. So we may be done a little bit earlier.
Why is it harder to trap in the rain?
Because the cats don't like it. They stay hunkered down.
Oh.
Just like me.
Well, yeah, that
I
makes sense.
Hunkered down too. Yeah.
That's kind of a silly question, but I never thought about that.
A lot of ferals don't own umbrellas.
Well, that would be a problem.
That's a very good point.
So maybe we need to do a drive, you know, get those little kitty umbrellas.
Umbrella drive. Hello, kitty umbrellas for all our feral cats.
For all the feral cats. So, Eric, I have a question for you. What made you decide? You're kind of the owner over here. What made you decide that you were going to go adopt feral cats, of all things?
Well, you know, somebody that had worked with a friend of mine had actually adopted the cats or brought them in to her house. And it was they were parents and had kittens. So it was a whole family really living on the street. So she saw them and lured them into the house and kind of was taking care of them, got them spayed, got them neutered. And all the kittens got adopted, but the parents still needed a home. So when I met the cats, I thought they were really cute. And so I thought, well, you know, maybe I can take care of them. And so I did, and it worked out good.
Is that normal to actually see a family? The male sticks around?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
They must be in love.
Yes.
A lot of cats will live in a colony and there'll be males and females. And, you know, I don't know if.
Wow.
Yeah, cats are definitely a couple, too. So.
Oh,
yeah,
that's sweet.
That's very sweet.
So, well, of course, she's white and fluffy.
Well, there you
go. Who doesn't like white and fluffy? So what are some things if people are out there going...
My couch, for one, but anyway.
There you go. So as an owner, what's the advantage of adopting feral cats? Or what's a tip that probably people should think about if they're thinking of adopting feral cats? I mean, that's different than adopting non-feral.
Sure, sure. Yeah. You got to be very patient. That's the, you know, because people expect their pet cats to, you know, be super cuddly and to want to be, you know, petted and held all the time. And they'll eventually get there if you're patient, but it takes time and you've got to make sure they know that they're in a safe place and that nothing bad is going to happen to them. And you just got to be patient.
Yeah, kind of like people.
Yeah, there are some ferals that I would advise against ever bringing into your home. There are some ferals that absolutely will not ever get the message, and they'll hurt themselves in your home trying to get away. So I think it's very important to really, you know, assess that cat. You know, there are feral cats. The word feral means having returned to a wild state. So some ferals would be like trying to bring a raccoon in and be like, come on, you're in a safe place, though. It's never going to work, ever, ever, ever. So there are semi-ferals as well where they're like, you know, I'm skittish, but I get you're going to feed me and I'm not going to freak out and I can sleep in your presence. Some, there are ferals, they will never sleep in your presence. They will never feel safe enough to do that. So I just wanted to make sure that we don't have all these people going out trapping ferals and be like, yeah, you could just live in my bathroom until you calm down.
And I understand if they've had some human interaction in their life, they're a lot more likely, to become pets. But if they haven't had human interaction, if they weren't handled as a kitten, then chances are good that they're going to be really hard to make good pets.
Well, as usual, the show is not long enough. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on today. Join us at www.walkthetalkwithkim for more information. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim on KKNW, LAM 1150.
The heart is a blue place. It's a beautiful